This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Good evening, and thank you for tuning in to Eco Radio. On tonight's program, John DeLury, who is with the Sierra Club's Beyond Coal campaign, will be talking about the Clean Power Plan, this weekend's upcoming events, and the Clean Power Plan's implication for both Missouri and Kansas. The second half of our show includes Gary Doerr, who is a tribal member in South Dakota. He's going to talk about the actions that took place over the weekend, plus the hearing today with regards to whether the pipeline will be permitted. But first, I'm Naturally with your headline news. EcoWatch.com reports, today the White House launched the American Business Act on Climate Pledge, with 13 U.S. businesses committing a total of $140 billion in new low-carbon investments and more than 1,600 megawatts of new renewable energy. Quote, each company is announcing significant new pledges to reduce their emissions, increase low-carbon investments, deploy more clean energy, and take other actions to build more sustainable businesses and tackle climate change, end quote, said the White House statement. The White House is hoping that these companies will lead by example, and this fall, the administration will release a second round of pledges, quote, with a goal of mobilizing many more companies to join the American Business Act on Climate Pledge, end quote. STLtoday.com reports, Maryland Heights-based Sun Edison, Inc. agreed to buy Vivint Solar, Inc., the second biggest U.S. solar panel installer, in a deal valued at about $2.2 billion, speeding up its expansion in the booming residential solar market. Demand for Vivint's residential solar systems have soared as the company that went public last October allows homeowners to lease its systems rather than buying them outright. A decline in equipment costs has also helped. And EcoWatch.com reports, just as the British government slashes subsidies for solar power and gears up to open up large swaths of the countryside to fracking, a coalition of human rights lawyers and academics have announced an international tribunal to put fracking, quote, on trial, end quote. Based on a descendant of the Vietnam War Crimes Tribunal of the 60s, the so-called Permanent People's Tribunal, or PPT, which is based in Rome, is an internationally recognized public opinion tribunal. It functions independently of state jurisdictions. Tribunals apply internationally recognized human rights law and policy to cases brought before them and are nearly identical to traditional courtroom proceedings. What this allows is ordinary people to compile and submit evidence about how the shale gas industry has impacted their health, their environment, their livelihood, or human rights. Hearings will be held both in the U.S., which has been at the forefront of the fracking boom, and the UK, will take place in front of the 5 to 7 jurists, experts, and international human rights law. The hearings are not due to start until the spring of 2017, giving communities affected by fracking enough time to compile the evidence of impact and harm. Now I'd like to welcome Mike Murphy to let us know what's coming up next.
Thank you very much, Natural E. Boy, what an interesting show we've got today. We've got John DeLury. He's with the Sierra Club's Beyond Coal campaign, and we're going to be talking about the clean energy plan. And in the second half of the program, we'll be hearing from Gary Doerr. There's been a lot going on in South Dakota this weekend. There was a public hearing today with regards to re-permitting the XL pipeline because their original permit expired. And so we'll hear about what happened in court today as well as all the actions that happened over the weekend. But right now, we've got John DeLury on the phone. Are you there, John?
Sure am.
Hey, thanks for joining us this evening.
Thank you, Mike.
So first of all, you're with Beyond Coal. Explain to us what that's about.
Sure. So the Beyond Coal campaign actually started fairly recently when you look at the overall history and timeline of the Sierra Club. So Sierra Club is the oldest, largest environmental organization in the country. We have our roots back in 1892 when John Muir was hiking through the Sierra Nevadas and showing Teddy Roosevelt all of the wonders of the natural world and trying to get parks declared. But fast forward in about a century, and we started to really hone in on what we viewed to be a crisis in America, which was our reliance on dirty, heavily polluting, climate change-causing coal. And so we sort of simplified our message and really focused our sights on trying to facilitate the transition away from coal and towards clean energy, like solar and wind and energy efficiency alternatives. So the campaign has had a lot of help from some major donors, including a large grant from Michael Bloomberg. But primarily, our efforts have been grassroots community organizing. And we have a fairly effective approach where we have been combining legal maneuvering with some down-to-earth grassroots organizing. And as I'll sort of elaborate a little bit later in the interview here, we're winning. And we actually just shut down our 200th coal plant since the Beyond Coal campaign began. And that announcement was about a week ago. So,
well, congratulations.
Thank you very much. And it's pretty exciting to be part of this. And I specifically cover Missouri. And as many of the listeners probably know, we are an especially coal-reliant state. About 80% of our electricity comes from coal. And that is terrifying compared to the nationwide average of 37%. So we have a long way to go, but we've got a lot of very passionate people who are interested in getting us there.
So do you think the Missouri reliance, or perceived reliance, has anything to do with the fact that Peabody Coal is in this state? Or?
Yeah, I think that is a major factor. The truth of the matter is that coal hasn't been pulled out of the ground here in Missouri in a decade, if not more. And so it really just comes down to political inertia. And a lot of that inertia comes from some of the major companies and corporations, many of them based out of St. Louis, that tend to have a bit of a chokehold on our political system. So change is tough, but a few voices with the right message pushing in the right direction. We've already seen some dramatic change here in Missouri, including a few coal plant closures just in the last year.
Yeah, well, that's great. So there's an event coming up this weekend that's kind of a celebratory thing. Would you say that?
Yeah, we're really trying to acknowledge the fact that I think within the environmental community, we win more often than we give ourselves credit for. Mm-hmm. And I know it doesn't always feel like that, and I know that whenever I am surrounded by my environmentally conscious friends, it seems to get very doom and gloom very quickly.
Yeah.
And that's because there's a lot to be concerned with and a lot to be fighting for. But what we are about to see released in the next week or two is a historic moment for the climate and for our transition to clean energy. And so I will spend a fair amount of time just getting us all up to speed about what that historic moment is. But just to give the bare bones details of the event, we are meeting at 10 a.m. this upcoming Saturday, August 1st, in the Berkeley Riverfront Park, which is right sort of riverside of City Market.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you prefer this landmark, it is directly across the rail yard from the Veolia coal plant. But we are going to bring together advocates and activists from around the Kansas City metro side, including some people from Kansas, to celebrate the Clean Power Plan, which is this rule that I keep foreshadowing. But again, August 1st, 10 a.m. in Berkeley Riverfront Park.
Okay, that's great. All right, so now bring us up to speed on what historic things we can expect in the next couple of weeks.
Sure. So in 2007, just to give some quick historical background, the EPA was essentially granted the authority under the Clean Power Plan to monitor and regulate carbon, to track greenhouse gases and to bring them into compliance under similar mechanisms as other existing frameworks within the Clean Air Act. So with this new authority, they've been trying to explore ways within the Obama administration to start to control greenhouse gases. And it is, in a lot of ways, somewhat unfortunate that it has had to come down to a regulatory approach, and that it really has required a very strong and unusually courageous EPA to step forward and to try to make this pathway towards decreasing carbon emissions. Because, of course, you know, we've tried and failed multiple other attempts that might have required the backing of Congress or of some of the state legislators. But the Clean Power Plan, which was released in its draft form in this last June of 2014, will require each state to reduce their carbon emissions by a certain percentage. And the states are given complete flexibility about the how and the pathway to take towards that reduction target, but the target they're solid, and it will be up to each state to figure out how to achieve that target so that the EPA doesn't intervene and make a pathway towards that targeted emissions reduction. So in Missouri, what this means is that by the year 2030, Missouri will have to have reduced our greenhouse gas emissions by 21% from 2012 levels. And that is a big chunk of some of the most toxic and troublesome gases that are causing climate change. And so it is changing the energy sector dramatically, but I think it has flown under the radar of the average climate activist or advocate, because while it doesn't go nearly far enough, we are going to see this as the first big step in the right direction in terms of addressing climate change.
So let me jump in here. Why do you say it doesn't go nearly far enough?
Because I think that we need reductions that are not only larger in scale, but faster in pace. And because of the nature of this type of regulation, it can only go so far and so fast. And I think there are other ways that we could dramatically reduce as we follow this path towards Clean Power Plan compliance. And I could go into some of the details of climate change and all of the reasons that I am terrified of it. I suspect some of those might be redundant to your listeners, but I think one story that I really do like to share about climate and why we need much more, much quicker, is from a pecan farmer up in Brunswick, Missouri. And he's a fifth-generation farmer. He has lived on that land for 75 years. And for the first time in five generations, he's had to start spraying his trees for pests that usually would never travel any further north than Arkansas. Wow. And so the average Missourian is already starting to feel all of the impacts that are coming down the road here with climate change. And yet a lot of our elected officials and decision makers keep putting their heads in the sand and hoping that some of these things will go away. So I want to see more, but I think that the Clean Power Plan does open up the conversation in a really important way.
You know, I'm not 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure I saw a dead armadillo on the side of the road on I-70 a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is also a symptom.
I wouldn't be too surprised. I mean, we're seeing things happen at a much faster rate than even the scientific community predicted just a handful of years ago. And so I think we're going to see that a lot of these negative feedback loops, which will accelerate the pace of climate change, are going to bear a very unfortunate fruit. And I think that the Clean Power Plan, again, will provide that framework, and it will hopefully lend itself to larger steps down the road.
Okay, so while this doesn't go far enough, there's still reason to find hope in this, is what you're saying. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah, and there is an unexpectedly large opposition to this. I mean, especially in Missouri and Kansas, these states may sound like bandits when it comes to the Clean Power Plan. Our emission reduction targets are minuscule compared to some of our neighbors and some other states around the country. And so you would think that given how flexible this plan is and given how much more would need to be done to really dramatically affect and mitigate climate change, that our elected decision makers might support this as an important first step and as a pilot project. But you are seeing a number of very conservative lawmakers come out fiercely opposed to the Clean Power Plan. And a lot of that is from pressure from different utility companies and coal companies and different lobbying and special interest groups. And that has taken its toll in a very local way. I think we'll see both Missouri and Kansas as key battleground states for the Clean Power Plan, because while the EPA does currently have the authority to regulate greenhouse gases, it could be attacked in a number of different ways through Congress over the next few months. And so before I forget and before I really dive into the happy celebratory tone that I promised you, I would want to make sure that I let your audience know that if they can and if they have time over the next couple of days, I would highly encourage them to call the office of Senator McCaskill. And that number, for everyone who doesn't have it handy, is 202-224-6154. And the main reason why we're looking at Senator McCaskill is because she is one of the few swing votes on this type of critically important protection. You know, you have plenty of people who are firmly in one camp or the other. To Senator McCaskill's credit, she is very moderate in the way that she handles some of these issues, and sometimes that's infuriating, and other times that can pay out. But I think we really do need her firmly in our camp as the Clean Power Plan runs through the gauntlet of Congress. And the more people calling her, especially from Kansas City, where she's got some of her roots, the better. So I'll just add that and then hopefully move to happier turf here in a second.
Okay, that's great. Yeah, why don't we go to happier turf?
Sure. So the good news is that this plan has importance on multiple different fronts. And I think just at a higher altitude, that importance comes from the economy of Missouri and Kansas, from the job creation potential in both of these states, and then also from a health perspective. So we really should look at this as a win-win-win solution rather than as something that we should either ignore or actively oppose. And so just to highlight a few recent studies, in Missouri, it was recently calculated that we ship out about $1.4 billion just to Wyoming to import our coal each year.
Wow.
And that is a heavy burden on the Missouri taxpayer, because those dollars are not going to recycle into our economy. It is a huge burden on the ratepayer, who will ultimately be paying the price of our delay in moving to more homegrown energy sources. And it is an embarrassment to the state that we are such a net importer of energy. It's substantially more than most other states. We're ranked as one of the top 10 net importing energy states. From a jobs perspective, there was a report recently announced that shows that there are nearly 40,000 clean energy jobs in Missouri. And those are primarily within the energy efficiency sector, but there are small businesses serving solar. You have medium and large businesses servicing wind energy projects. And these are good, high-paying, well-trained workers who are taking steps towards retooling our workforce and making sure that we are ready for the clean energy economy that is an inevitability at this point. And then lastly, from a health perspective, and this will bring me back towards the celebration, the Harvard School of Public Health recently released a report that shows that in Missouri alone, the Clean Power Plan will save 120 lives each year. And this is a conservative estimate, but this is based on the co-benefits of the Clean Power Plan. So this doesn't even factor in climate change. Mm. That's how powerful this rule can be. This is just from reducing local air and water pollution, particularly SO2 and smog and a few other really nasty, terrible particulate matters and pollution particles that inhibit breathing and can cause all sorts of respiratory illnesses. So that 120 number is very significant to us and to a lot of the environmental community in Missouri, because this is something we fought for almost a decade, and we are about to see all of that labor pay off. And so we'd like to get at least 120 people at Berkeley Riverfront Park at 10 a.m. this upcoming Saturday, August 1st, to represent all those lives that are saved thanks to the Clean Power Plan. And so we'll have people holding sunflowers. We've got about 120 sunflowers coming into the event. And we'll be taking some photos to thank the administration, to thank the EPA, and to show some of our elected officials who can make or break the Clean Power Plan that we really do value those lives, and we really do value our future, and we really do want them to act to help us mitigate climate change. So that's sort of the crux of the event there, is based on those health issues, but we'll have speakers from across the economic and political world there.
Do you happen to know what the corresponding number would be for the state of Kansas?
I don't know that they zoomed in on Kansas for that study.
Okay.
But because the Kansas reductions are actually even higher, Kansas is shooting for 23% reductions by the year 2030. I suspect it's at least that high. So if not higher, it would be comparable. And so this really is going to result in a dramatic health benefit. And just across the board and on a national level, the ultimate cost-benefit analysis that was plugged in by the EPA's staff shows that this will yield probably about $84 billion of benefits over the lifetime of the project. And so I think we'll see a lot of that here in Missouri and here in Kansas, but this rule is really a no-brainer from a cost-benefit analysis.
Well, that's great. So anything we need to say about the rule itself before we go into more detail about the event?
Yeah, the only thing that I will add is that the rule as it currently stands does give the state flexibility about how to implement this. And this leaves us at a bit of a crossroads because there are four building blocks. It's essentially a menu of items that you can select to comply with that that reduction target. And so those four blocks are increasing the efficiency of your coal plants. Block two is switching to natural gas. Block three is increased renewable energy and carbon neutral sources of electricity. And block four is increased consumer side energy efficiency. So those are energy audits, you know, insulation, replacing your windows, things like that. And so, as you can probably imagine, we like two of those blocks much better than the others. Mm-hmm. And that probably puts us at odds with our friends over at Peabody Coal and at Ameren Electric and at a number of the other major corporate players who will be trying to push for the first two building blocks that allow them to keep pursuing business as usual and don't really require them to be challenged to really embrace and understand the clean energy economy as it grows. And so for all of you activists and advocates out there, as this conversation matures and as it continues in the wake of the final plan coming out, please reach out to your elected officials and let them know that you know that not all pathways to compliance are created equally, and that, sure, we could probably reduce our emissions by the targeted amount just by building a whole bunch of natural gas plants, but that would be a missed opportunity. To truly embrace clean energy and to understand energy efficiency initiatives. And I am worried about the role that some of these major corporate players will have in both Kansas and Missouri to make sure that you know the clean power compliance plan is catering to their interests.
Oh yeah, I share that as well. So why don't we try and wrap up on a happy note then? Let's talk about this celebration that's happening this Saturday again. Give us maybe a little bit more detail.
Sure. So the schedule of events is that at 10 a.m., we're all going to meet in Berkeley Riverfront Park. And I know I've said this a couple times, but just in case anyone's tuning in, and that is right next to the City Market. We will have a few live musical performances, including a duo called Solar.
Mm-hmm. And they've performed on their show before.
Perfect. Well, then y'all are probably familiar with them, but they've got a great sound and an even greater message.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
They're going to be there to play some music for us. We'll have some face painting for some of the families in the neighborhood, and we'll also have some arts and crafts projects to make some large signs that will hold up. We'll then have some speakers from the Kansas City area to represent some of the afflicted communities by air pollution and to address the clean energy economy and the health benefits of this rule. And then after that, we'll have the option, and I will most certainly be taking this option because I'm excited for the opportunity to walk along the Riverfront Park there, over the Town of Kansas Bridge, and then back down to the Veolia coal plant, where we will stand there and just remind them that while the Clean Power Plan gives us 120 lives saved in Missouri each year, that number could be even more if point sources like Veolia also took their path away from coal. And I don't think I have time to dive into too much more about the Veolia plant, but they are not included within the Clean Power Plan because they don't generate electricity, they generate steam.
Oh.
And so there's another sort of reason why the Clean Power Plan doesn't go quite far enough. But the main crux of the event is going to be from 10 to 11 or 11:30 in Berkeley Riverfront Park, hopefully with all of us smiling and holding sunflowers to represent all of the lives that we've saved through our efforts over the last 5 or 6 years, fighting for climate action and fighting for a protection just like the Clean Power Plan.
Well, John Delory with Beyond Coal, congratulations. And thank you for saving those lives. The lives you saved may have been your own. And so we certainly appreciate your efforts, and we certainly appreciate your sharing with us this evening. And we have posted on Eco Radio KC's Facebook page a link to the event for this Saturday's event, 120 Lives, 120 Sunflowers. And so, John, thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
No, thank you so much, and thanks to everybody who's made this show a possibility and to all of your listeners out there who care enough to chime in.
All right. Thanks, John. Bye-bye.
Take care.
That was John DeLury. In just a couple of minutes, we're going to get Gary Doerr on from up in South Dakota. We're going to find out what's going on with the pipeline up there, but we've got going to play you some messages while we get him on the phone.
This week, the most fundamental challenge of the human condition is the fact that we're going to die, the end of all our hopes and dreams and projects.
The quest to live forever. We're thinking about the human obsession with life after death. I'm Maureen Fiedler. That's next time on Interfaith Voices.
Tuesday at noon, right before The Jazz Disciple.
On the next Radioactive magazine, host Brian Nolan joins activist and social worker Alice Kitchen with a special guest to discuss Kansas City's new minimum wage ordinance, the fight to keep it alive, the likely legal challenges it will face from its opponents, and the alleged benefits cliff that could result for single mothers. That's on Radioactive magazine, Tuesday at 6 p.m.
Motorboat, motorboat, go so clean. On this current cast... According to the U.S. Coast Guard, more than 80 million adults in the U.S. enjoy spending time on the water each year from a boat, canoe, or kayak. Yet almost 300,000 miles of waterways do not meet state water quality goals. Boaters can make a difference by following a few simple tips. Prevent oily discharge from the bilge by placing an oil absorbent under the engine. Spill-proof your oil changes and refuel slowly, leaving room for fuel expansion. Manage your sewage waste properly and never throw trash overboard. Remember, before you put anything in the water, imagine yourself swimming in it and choose clean and healthy waterways. Support for CurrentCast comes from the Mitsubishi Corporation Foundation for the Americas. Learn more online at currentcast.org.
90.1 FM, Kansas City Community Radio, wants to give thanks to our sustaining givers. By being a sustaining donor, you get the satisfaction and convenience of making a monthly contribution to your community radio station. This saves cost, which puts more of your contribution into the news and music programs that you love. To become a sustaining giver, please contact Warren at 816-994-7871. And thanks again from the staff and volunteers at KKFI 90.1 FM. The 10th Dimension Paranormal Group is hosting Paracon 2015. It's a paranormal conference to be held on Friday, July 31st and Saturday, August 1st. You can hear about ghost hauntings, UFOs, and Bigfoot. They'll be holding the event at the Old Sugar Creek Gym, 11232 Chicago Street, Sugar Creek, Missouri. Doors open Friday at 10:30 a.m. and go until 11 p.m., and then Saturday from 10 a.m. until 11 p.m. Proceeds will go to Sugar Creek Gym and 90.1 FM, KKFI. For tickets and more information, go to KansasCityParacon.net. Again, that's KansasCityParacon.net.
And here we are back in the studio here on Eco Radio KC. Thanks to John DeLury of Beyond Coal for catching us up on what's going on with them and their celebratory event this Saturday. Right now we have Gary Doerr on the line. And Gary's with the Nez Perce tribe, and he's up in South Dakota. There's been a lot going on up there. Just to bring our listeners up to speed, Keystone had a pipeline permit approved 5 years ago, but it was with the idea that they'd start working on it within 5 years. And, of course, due to a lot of reasons that timeline has expired, so they had to reapply. And so the Public Utilities Commission was held a hearing today. It was originally scheduled for a couple of months ago. And based around that hearing, there were a lot of actions, a lot of folks from around the state and supposedly from around the country descended upon this city there and expressed some opposition. And is that a fair way of characterizing it, Gary?
Yes, you've got it pretty well.
Okay, so first of all, tell us a little bit about what happened this weekend. Like, how many people showed up? What kind of actions took place?
Okay, we had some horse riders, native horse riders and non-native horse riders, come in from four directions and descend on Pierre, South Dakota. And so when you put an Indian on a horse, that's a special prayer. And, you know, the horse was one of the protectors of the people and one of the warriors right along with our warriors. So they carry prayers with them. And they brought that here for the protection of the land, the resources. And so we met just outside of Pier at Fort Pier. We assembled there with approximately 400 people.
Wow.
And these are people from Nebraska, South Dakota, North Dakota. We had some people from Illinois. I think there was a couple from Texas and Nebraska. And so they all descended here. And we started like we do any of our ceremonies, and this was a ceremony. So we started with some good prayers, some good songs with the drum group. And then we had the women, some of the elders that were assembled here, carry the water. And the water was, it's a medicine. And it's the first medicine given to us because we're born from water, from inside the womb. So those women carry that prayer with them. And so we had them bring some of the water from the four directions. We had people that came from the far reaches. They had them bring water. So the water also converged here. And so we marched over the Missouri River, and we stopped four times on the bridge to offer prayers to the four directions. And we went into Pier, into a city park, where the elders, women, assembled, along with one young lady who was a horse rider. And they offered prayers with that medicine, pizuta, the mani, the water. And when they joined that water all together, like one prayer in a bowl, and then they went down to the river and they offered that water back into the body of water, the Missouri River. So the river is carrying our prayers now. And so that's kind of the gist of what we were doing. We're also bringing the truth here to appear as part of this hearing, and we wanted to bring attention to the fact that the tribal people are here. We have an issue, and it's a valid issue, and it's not being brought up in the Keystone XL Pipeline hearings here at the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission hearings. So that was kind of what was to bring awareness to the fact that we're here, we're living here, and we're here to protect the resources.
Well, that's something else. Are you with the Indigenous Environmental Network? Is that
I work with them. I'm a grassroots member. I was, you know, part of the Cowboy Union Alliance. We went to Washington D.C. last year.
Mm-hmm.
I did help coordinate the creation of the Rosebud Sioux Tribe Spirit Camp back in March 29th, 2014. And after that, we went all over the country, but our big one was the Cowboy Indian Alliance Reject and Protect campaign in Washington, D.C. And we had a bunch of people from all over the world literally coming there. And so we've just been progressing, and that camp has been continuously occupied since March 29, 2014. And as a matter of fact, it's right within feet of where the pipeline is going to go in. So you know, I've been involved with this actually here in this area from 2013, October, is when we first started holding meetings. And so now I'm still part of, you know, I work with in between all groups, but I'm a grassroots member, and I'm also an intervener in the court case or the hearing here.
What was it that gave you intervener status?
Well, actually, I had to fight for it. There was a series of hearings where they decided who was going to be an intervener. And basically, if you lived in the area, they kind of granted you that status. But we have people that live over the Oglala Aquifer, which, as you might know, goes from South Dakota through Nebraska, through Kansas, through Oklahoma, all the way into Texas. So, you know, if people live on that aquifer, this pipeline is going to contaminate that aquifer if it ever leaks or when it leaks. So yeah. You have literally people from here to Texas that have an interest in whether this pipeline goes in or not. So we had a lot of people from Nebraska that are still interveners. But we held a series of hearings, and we had to argue our case to justify why we were going to be presenting in this hearing.
Okay.
And so I was granted intervener status.
I also understand that people in this area might want have some concern, too, because the Missouri River is what is kind of connects us as well, right?
Yes. And this is going to cross the Missouri River. And, you know, this has a very potent mix in it, because when you get tar sands out of the ground, you're not drilling for it. You're mining for it. It's like asphalt. So they have to heat it up, and then they add some dilutants to it. And the dilutants are what should concern everyone downstream. It's BTEX, which is benzene, toluene, ethylbenzene, and xylene. And with a polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbon, which all four of those, all five of those ingredients are carcinogenic. And we don't know that there is a safe level for exposure to it. And so if or when this leaks in underneath the Missouri River, the problem is it's going to be so far under, it's going to be 25 feet underneath the bed of the river. And so they're relying on a technology where, let's say on one side of the river, let's say 100 gallons goes down the pipe, 100 gallons should be coming out the other side. The problem is that system has yet to work perfectly. We don't know that it will. TransCanada has admitted 1% to 2% of all the oil along the pipeline will leak undetected from very small points. Well, we're talking about 830,000 barrels of Dilbit, diluted bitumen, per day. That's like 4.4 million gallons. You have to figure out 1% to 2% of that. That's a lot of exposure somewhere. And that's if everything's working perfectly. And that can go into the Missouri River, the Cheyenne River, the White River, and the Oglala Aquifer. So when, you know, when you're downstream, you need to be looking upstream to see what's going on, and that's what we're doing. We're not only fighting for native rights, native drinking water, we're fighting for everybody's water, everybody's grandchildren's water, because that's how long this exposure from this stuff is going to be around if it pollutes.
Wow. So tell us a little bit what happened. Today there was a hearing. How did that go?
Yeah, today was the first day of the hearing, and so people marked exhibits. Basically, it's anything that you're going to use as evidence was entered in today, given a number. And then as the hearing progresses, you present that evidence at certain points, like if you're doing direct testimony or whatever, or in your own testimony or rebuttal testimony. So we marked exhibits this morning, and then we started in with the first testimony or opening statements by everybody. And then we started with the questioning of Corey Goulet, who is the president of the Keystone XL Pipeline Project. And so we got to have opening statements, and I'm one of the people that would, out of all the interveners, 17 of them have been precluded from offering testimony or witnesses because TransCanada made a motion early on to have them excluded, and I had to fight to stay in there. So I got to stay in, but along the way, TransCanada has chipped away, chipped away, and chipped away. And so all of my evidence relating to the treaty rights or the crossing of the Maniwatoni waterline, all of mine has been precluded. So I wasn't able to offer any exhibits. But I was able to cross-examine their first witness today, Mr. Corey Goulet. So that's you have the tribes represented here by council, and then you have some non-governmental organizations, Bold Nebraska, the Code of Rural Action, those type of groups that have their own representation, and the Tribal Council on Utility Projects, those type of things. So they have their own council. Now, I'm an individual intervener, which means intervener pro se. I'm not a lawyer, so I just represent myself. And there's about, I'd say about 12 of us that are actually in the room, but there's a very limited amount of us that are actually still in the case all the way. So a lot of them have been limited in testimony because of what's happened.
So you you presented your statement. Did legal counsel for TransCanada did they cross-examine you? I'm not sure. This isn't like a trial, right?
It's a civil process. It's similar to a trial. They follow civil rules here, which would be the court rules. But what happens basically is at the start, it's just an opening statement, and it's not really challenged. You just get to say what you want. It's basically, here's what's going to happen, here's what I think, and then you get to prove that throughout the course of the hearing. So TransCanada doesn't cross-examine the opening statements.
I got you.
And then after that, that's when they presented their first witness, and now we were able to cross-examine them. And so he spent, I'd say, a good 4 hours under cross-examination today with relation to tribal rights and a couple of the technical questions on the pipeline design, and the Keystone 1 failures were brought into this, and the fact that the pipeline hazardous PHMSA. Anyway, it's the safety guidelines for pipelines. That there were some issues there that were brought up by some of the attorneys. So, it was interesting to be this far into the process and actually see this up front. But the main part for mine is that the council has the tribes. The tribes have the trump card here. The magic trump card is treaty rights.
Mm.
And because treaty rights under the second clause of Article 6 of the United States Constitution are considered the supreme law of the land. So that means states legally are not supposed to rule in opposition to anything that is in a treaty. Well, the Treaty of 1868, the Fort Laramie Treaty here, states that you can't cross their territory or live in their territory without the tribe's consent. And people think, well, that's a treaty. Oh, that's separate. Well, the treaty was brought into Congress and ratified in 1868. And it was ratified under 15.635. That makes it a part of federal law. And so the first amended permit condition that we're arguing against TransCanada having this pipeline certified is that they cannot meet they can't comply with all applicable laws or rules or regulations because they have never gained consent of the tribe, and that consent is ratified in 15.635. So there's other ways of getting around that. It'll be interesting to see this week. People can go to the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission. If you Google that and go to the South Dakota Public Utilities page, at the top of the page you can look. There's a live link, Listen Live. And you can listen to the hearing live as it's happening in the PUC hearing room. And I'll be in ceremony from starting tomorrow until Saturday, so I won't be there this week anymore. But then I'll come back on Monday, and this is supposed to go all the way up until Wednesday of next week.
Oh, wow. Could you give that link out one more time?
Well, Google the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission.
Okay.
And at the top of the page, there's a Listen Live. And then click on that, and you can listen to the hearing.
Oh, that's good to know. Thank you for that information. I can't thank you enough for jumping on with us this evening, and appreciate all your hard work. I know this has been probably a big part of your life these past couple of years,
I have no idea. as many nights I went without sleep getting ready, prepping a brief or a response. And, it's just, you have to know what you're doing. You have to love what you're doing. And this is for the generations that come behind us. And there's so many people that are doing the same thing. there's so many people at the ground level that are working either the ceremony, the legal, the political, or the media, so that this can all come together in a good way. So a lot of people have been putting a lot of work into this.
Gary Doerr, member of the Nez Perce tribe, thank you so much for joining us this evening, and I hope you can keep us posted in the coming weeks.
Yeah, if you go to my Facebook page, Gary Doerr/Hodgy, I've got a couple links there about calling the president to tell him to reject the Keystone XL pipeline permit at the federal level.
Okay. Thank you, Gary. Have a good evening, and I hope you can get some sleep tonight.
All right. Well, thank you, sir.
All right. Good night.
All right. Good night.
And now we're going to go to our calendar of events with Natural E.
Thanks, Mike. Starting at 7 p.m. tonight, the Johnson County Government building at 111 South Cherry Street in Olathe, Kansas. The Johnson County Commission has voted to tentatively increase the mill levy to fund improved transit as well as parks and libraries. So there's a public hearing to be held to accept public comments. This new funding will increase transit service in Johnson County. So if you're a transit supporter, you can attend the public hearing, and this meeting will be held in the commission chamber on the third floor, which is at 111 South Cherry Street in Olathe, Kansas. On August 1st, from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m., Seed Saving 101 will teach beginners how to save seeds from their gardens. The class will cover why seed saving is important, how to save seeds, and will include demonstrations of different seed saving methods. This workshop is hosted by Seed Savers KC. The seed library is on site. So it's from 2 to 4 p.m. on August 1st at Anita B. Gorman Discovery Center, which is located at 4750 Troost Avenue. For more information, you can visit seedsavers-kc.org. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is preparing an Environmental Impact Statement, or EIS, to analyze the direct, indirect, and cumulative effects of commercial dredging of sand and gravel from the Kansas River and the state of Kansas. The Friends of the Caw are asking you to join them at the scoping meeting on August 4th. Public attendance at this meeting is very important, and it shows that the public supports and is interested in the EIS process. The public is invited to contribute additional information concerning the proposed projects. Statement should be supported by factual information. The Kansas River is a state treasure and, in 2012, was designated as a national water trail. In addition to providing recreation and drinking water, the Kaw also plays a significant role in the economy and ecology of the state of Kansas. So join the Friends of the Kaw in protecting this valuable resource on Tuesday, August 4th, from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. at the Lawrence Public Library Auditorium, which is located at 707 Vermont Street in Lawrence, Kansas. On August 3rd, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., the Sustainable Sanctuary Coalition, the Kansas Sierra Club, and the Village Church Environmental Action Committee will be hosting the event Effective Climate Change Communication. They will address communication between interfaith communities and how to talk about environmental problems. The fourth episode of Years of Living Dangerously will be shown, followed by a panel discussion. The panel discussion will feature Kristen Riot, Executive Director of Bridging the Gap, Andrew Pratt, Vice President for Social Responsibility and Engagement, and Dean of the Chapel at William Jewell College, and many other speakers. And this is a free event from 7 to 9 p.m. on Monday, August 3rd at the Village Presbyterian Church, and the address there is 6641 Mission Road. You can find more information by visiting sskc.org. You can also find these events on our Eco Radio KC Facebook page.
And did you mention the one we talked about earlier?
At the Berkeley Riverfront Park.
Yeah.
Park this Saturday, that's the Riverfront Park is right next to City Market. You can join our guest that we heard today that was from the Sierra Club. And it's at 10 a.m. And they're going to be celebrating the 120 lives that they saved because of the clean power plan. And they hope to be able to save more by getting them to make this plan a little stronger than it already is.
That's right. They're calling it 120 Lives, 120 Sunflowers. And you can see that event. And I think you have some of the other ones posted on our Eco Radio Facebook page. Is that right?
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Natural E. Coming up at 7 o'clock is Sabor Latino. And if that doesn't grab your fancy, you might want to check out kdhx.org. It's the community radio station in St. Louis. Their weekly environmental program called Earthworms is coming up. And also, you may want to check out kkfi.org for other environmentally related programs on our radio station. Thank you so much for listening. We'll get this podcast up as quickly as we can. I'm going to go out with, it looks like this week in water, naturally. This is the second week in a row. It's not been available, so I don't know whether we're not going to get that anymore. But this past weekend, I spent some time recording at the Green Party's annual national meeting. It was in St. Louis, Missouri, and there was a lot of interesting events, and stay tuned for some of them coming up on KKFI, although not necessarily on this program. One thing I did record for this program, I interviewed David Cobb. David Cobb was the Green Party's presidential candidate in 2004. He's also the co-founder and chair of Move to Amend, about getting money out of politics. And I had the chance to speak with him a little bit about why environmentalists need to be concerned about Move to Amend. So that's what we're going to go out with tonight. We'll hear my brief chat with David Cobb. This was recorded just on Saturday, so do stay tuned. Okay, so I'm here with David Cobb. David just finished giving a presentation on Move to Amend at the National Green Party Conference. And David, I want to know what Move to Amend means to the environmental movement. Why should environmentalists be concerned about this?
Well, remember that Move to Amend is a campaign to abolish the illegitimate court-created ideas that a corporation is a person with constitutional rights and that money is speech. And the reason that environmentalists should support this campaign, Mike, is because there's no way to properly protect the environment. There's no way to move towards sustainability as long as these legal doctrines are in effect. For example, virtually any environmental law that we work our butts off to get passed in this totally corrupt corporatized system is still subject to being overturned in the courts, where we have virtually no ability or authority to influence decision, because there is a corporate right to harm the environment. Nature herself does not have inherent and inalienable rights to exist, but corporations have the right to actually claim that laws that are attempting to protect the environment are violating their rights and therefore can be overturned. That means local, state, federal environmental laws are challenged in court and are often overturned in court. So what I would say to environmentalists, I am an environmentalist. I'm an ecologist, actually. I'm a deep ecologist. We have to keep doing our work to struggle and fight on every front. But I also recognize that the state regulatory frameworks are woefully inadequate. Frankly, environmental laws typically regulate environmentalists, not the corporations that they purport to regulate. In fact, it's so bad, Mike, that there is a term for it. It's called regulatory capture, where it becomes a revolving door where the industries literally look to the environmental groups as if they are there to serve them rather than that they're there to police them. So what I would say, the short answer is environmentalists and deep ecologists should support Move to Amend because we need each other. We have got to succeed together or we cannot win.
Well said. Thank you very much, David.
Missed last week's Echo Radio KC? No worries. You can listen online at kkfi.org.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.